And welcome back to Robbinsdale Revisited. My name is Pete Ritchie, and I smile every time I tell someone I'm the president of the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Today, we're stepping inside one of Robbinsdale's most storied homes, the Robbins Mansion, and using something surprisingly revealing to guide us, the census. What can we tell from just these records? In 1910, the house is full, almost overflowing. We find Andrew B. Robbins and his wife Adelaide at the center, surrounded by their daughters Amy, recently separated, Esther, Ruth, recently widowed, and Edith. She's living there with her husband Thomas Daniel. The household also includes a servant, Elvina Madro, and a coachman, Ed Dodge. It is a snapshot of a large, active family at a turning point, because that same year, Andrew B. Robbins dies, and the responsibility of the estate begins to shift. By 1920, the house is still busy, but the shape of the family has changed. Now we see Amy, Edith, and their mother Adelaide, and Edith's daughter Helen, along with servant Charles Glass. The men are largely gone, and what remains is something different, a household led by women, managing property, raising children, and beginning to define the next chapter of the Robbins legacy. By 1930, there's another shift. Edith and her daughter have moved to 4223 West Broadway. The big house on Twin Lake is no longer the center of daily life. What had once been a bustling family home is starting to fade from its role as the hub of the Robbins story. So, just over a couple decades, the census lets us watch this transformation from a full, multi-generational household anchored by Andrew B. Robbins to a women-led family navigating loss, business, and independence, to finally a quieter chapter as the family disperses. And that story of resilience, reinvention, and community leadership really belongs to Edith Robbins. After her father's death in 1910, Edith becomes executor of the estate alongside her mother, though it's Edith who seems to take on the active role. By around 1920, she's running the Andrew B. Robbins estate and loan business, along with the Jefferson Highway Tea House with her sister Amy. She's writing and publishing poetry, raising her daughter Helen Mary Robbins Daniel, and serving her community. She's elected to the school board and remains there for decades, becoming a familiar and respected figure in Robbinsdale's civic life. She's involved in major local efforts, from the development of Victory Memorial Drive to ambitious, if unrealized, plans for a VA hospital nearby. Through it all, she remains deeply tied to both place and family, whether managing properties, corresponding with relatives, or supporting her daughter's education and future. And in the second half of today's episode, you'll hear a reading by Crystal Boyd of Edith Robbins' juvenile poetry collection, The Children's Land of Out of Doors, a charming, imaginative work that reflects her love of children, nature, and language. So as we move through this episode, keep that image in mind, a large house filled with voices, gradually quieting over time, leaving behind a legacy carried forward in business, in civic life, and in poetry. So we got this big family living in the house. Dad passes away in 1910. Edith is named the executor of his estate along with her mother, but I don't think her mother's very active in the real estate business. They don't have the Jefferson Highway Tea House up and running. Amy hasn't joined them in the business, and Amy's not living with them at this point. So she's off with her husband, probably in her little house that was pretty close to Crystal Lake. Maybe that's still going well. The Robbins women didn't keep their husbands for very long. Well, I shouldn't say that. Some of them had longer second marriages. We know that sometime during the 1920s, Thomas Lester Daniel disappears from the Robbins family, and I'm sure they got divorced, but I just can't find the paperwork for that. So Edith is running the Andrew B. Robbins estate, real estate, and loan business. Right around 1920, when Amy comes back from the war, they go into business on West Broadway, and they buy this little house, and they go out to the quarry and pick out the stones for the fireplace and the wall, and they run their business out of that place. And we know T.B. Walker had them in his address book, and
whenever we look at real estate ads from the time, we can see that address. So we know that's kind of where they ran their business out of. About this time, Edith is also interested in publishing. She's been publishing her poems in a variety of ways over the years. Sometimes it's greeting cards. Sometimes it's little pamphlets for children. She gets picked up by a couple publishers. She's adopted her daughter. Helen Mary Robbins Daniel is the name. So she's got dad's name and she carries that for the rest of her life. And she grows up and gets married and eventually lives in South Minneapolis. So Edith is running this business. She's dabbling in publishing and she's running for the school board for the first time. And she gets elected to the school board. And I think the town is somewhat proud. There's newspaper articles about, well, this town was founded in 1893, and to this day, we have a descendant of the founding family on the school board, and she serves on that school board till her death in 1944, but she's really active in the real estate business. One of the big projects they've got is Victory Memorial Drive is being built. Amy was very active in Veterans Affairs and was involved in the planning of the dedication ceremonies where they had Black Jack Pershing out here and a guy named Fox from France came over. He was a French general and they had these platforms built and they gave these big speeches and it was quite the event. That wasn't supposed to be the end of it. We weren't just going to have Victory Memorial Drive, which I'll just mention most of it is in Robbinsdale. The border between Minneapolis and Robbinsdale is Xerxes Avenue. So almost all of the drive, as you come up from where North Moira Hospital is and all the way to the flagpole, that's in Robbinsdale. When the drive starts heading over into Camden, and I think it's called Weber Parkway over there, that's North Minneapolis. But Amy and Edith Robbins looked at this drive and they started lobbying the federal government for a VA hospital here in Robbinsdale. That was the plan. Why would we want that old VA hospital down there in South Minneapolis, next to Minnehaha Falls? There was already a veterans home. And it was full. At that time, it was still full of people that had served in the Civil War, you know, which ended many years before, but they were aged and they were living there. And then you had people that were in the Spanish-American War were living there too. But the idea was to build a great big series of buildings on the Robbinsdale side of Victor Memorial Drive, where there weren't very many houses. And you would have a VA hospital, some administration buildings. And that kind of fizzled out for a variety of reasons. And then they got an even bigger plan. What if you extended Victor Memorial Drive and you actually had it cross Twin Lake with a little bit of a causeway and then put the VA hospital on the other side of the lake, which I think is really interesting. Again, this didn't come to fruition, mostly because Edith and Amy were trying to convince all the landholders along that route to give their land to the federal government. Maybe, you know, buy it for pennies on the dollar or something, you know, and they just weren't going to do that. That was not going to be in the cards. But the plans were drawn up and it was pretty grandiose. And I think it, in some ways, it foretold, because nobody knew at that time that the Beltline Highway was eventually just going to buzz across Twin Lake too. They were looking at crossing the lake in about the same place with their plans. So they were somewhat ambitious real estate people. Okay, so in November 26, 1923, we have a letter from Edith to her mother. Well, look at this letterhead. The Foster Waldo Corporation, Pianos and Phonographs, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 811 Nicollet Avenue. Why she's writing on this letterhead, it just must have been handy. Lovely green stationery. Yeah, so Crystal's going to read this letter from Edith to her mother.
Dear Mother, I am glad you are to be with Esther for Thanksgiving. I do wish I could see my lovely niece. That afternoon she loved me so was the best time I have had for a long while. I wish they could come up here for Christmas. It's pretty near here now. I don't like to have the beautiful Scots down there without any of their large, pestiferous families with them. I think Amy has very nice tenants for both the upstairs and downstairs of her house, and the Gibbons tribe seem just fine at your house. Helen M. was one of 3 in 41 to get 100 in the long speed test in addition and subtraction of fractions. She had a special commendation from the principal. Ruth has asked us to have Thanksgiving dinner with them, which will be fine. I just finished paying up on the piano. It took a long time, but it is ours now. I think we have sold another lot in Lakeshore. We will know Wednesday. Have a good visit everywhere. I wrote the addresses of Xenia people, the Amys are in Xenia, and Robert Craig in Dayton to Ann Walker's address. It seems to me if you find Amy sorely needing $100, you ought to feel that you can give it to her. I would like to cut out all Christmas, except the children, and give Amy and Uncle Oliver each $100. Don't let our extravagant ideas reach the ears of our millionaire relatives. Keep it dark. Do you know where Mabel Sturrett is? She would so love to see you. We are all very well and able to outwalk or outrun anyone we'll ever see. I must run along. Give my best love to all the relatives you see. A large hug to the best mother in the world, Edith.
Just seems like Edith and her mother were probably pretty close. They also weren't that far away at this time. Edith's address is her mother's address. We get a little bit of an insight into what their financial situation was. Amy's taking on renters, so my guess is by that time her husband Ware has been kicked out or they're divorced. We're taking on renters in the big house. The Gibbons family appears to be there. Esther and Ruth are both living in South Minneapolis, so I don't know that they're part of that. But it seems like Edith is probably running the show and the finances and just kind of keeping her mother in the loop.
Pete, tell me more about this Helen who is doing the math. Is that her adopted daughter?
That's her daughter, Helen Mary Daniel. I think there might have been a Robbins in her name, but it's Helen Mary Daniel. By all accounts, was really bright and well-adjusted and went on, got married, and moved to South Minneapolis. They all seemed to like Kenwood. My guess is they were she married well, as did the other Robbins sisters, and they had big houses over there on behind the Walker Arts Center, probably to be near to the family of T.B. Walker, who they were all related to. And the Robbins family was relatively prosperous, too, and was involved in the milling business. Most of them lived in either St. Paul or Anoka, so they seemed to gravitate toward the mom side of the family. And those people were all situated down there in Kenwood. So another thing that Edith did is she owned land in Robbinsdale. And when the city needed to build a water tower in the 1930s, she sold them the land for $18,000 to build the water tower on. And she also owned a house, which was sort of where Hubbard Avenue and Noble and everything kind of become a little mess there. She had a house right there that was a rental, but she also lived in it too. In 1929, Edith is still probably living over at the Robbins Mansion. But that year, she lost her mother and her sister. Amy went first, and then her mother went a few months later. At that point, I'm sure she's looking around the house. It's just her and her daughter. Adelaide has moved out and moved on. Ruth has remarried a Dr. Rhoda, and she must have just looked around and said, this is going to be too much for me to maintain, this is going to be too much for me to do. And of course, they had built the Highway Tea House, so Edith decided to go live in the Highway Tea House, and that was where her address was listed for a number of years after that. And one of our members, Susie Klatke, likes to tell a story that she was a little girl, and she went up onto the porch of the tea house, and it was a it was right there next to the main drag where all the businesses are. And she was just curious about the house and the building. And she went up onto the porch and she was going to knock on the door or look inside. I think she knew that Edith lived there. And then under a bunch of covers on a couch on the porch, this woman woke up. She'd been taking a nap and she said, hello, what are you doing on my porch? And, Susie says she ran off because the woman scared her, but that was Edith Robbins. And, there are lots of examples of when she attended school functions. She was there when they put the time capsule into the wall at the old high school building. And she had worked hard to secure the funds from the PWA administration, had done a lot of the paperwork because she was the treasurer and then the secretary on the school board at the time. She would occasionally get up and give a little speech to the school board, and she would make the papers whenever she got elected. There's some firsthand accounts of memories of her, but they're getting faded as we go on. I mean, she died in 1944, so
there are fewer and fewer people who remember her well. But she was always remembered as sort of this matriarch of the town. I mean, everybody knew that she was descended from Andrew B. Robbins and that her family owned this giant house over on Twin Lake. She had caretakers in the house for about a decade, but by 1940, it sounds like the house was just left to rot. The neighbors were complaining about it, that nobody was living there. Transients were breaking into it. And when she died, the house was torn down quickly. She also had some real estate dealings where they were building a new high school, and she had to recuse herself from a couple votes because they needed to buy some of her land or the school grounds where the high school was being built. I love the pictures of her in the yearbook. They would feature the school board, which I don't know that they do that in yearbooks still. She still has her 1920s haircut where she has her hair cut short and cropped. She's always just got a little bit of a smile on her face. And she had a very long obituary in the Robbinsdale Post where they just went on and on about her accomplishments, her love of children, her love of poetry and literature. And of course, she was accomplished in all those areas. And she was the Robbins daughter that stayed here and was most active in the community. Amy would have been probably right here along with her. Amy would have run for Congress from Robbinsdale, but, you know, Edith outlived Amy by 15 years. And during those 15 years, she really played quite a role, whether it was selling property to the city of Robbinsdale, whether it was helping to, when we go from village to city, she worked on the Charter Commission to, you know, create the charter to become a city. And she just seems to have really, like, had her hand in a lot of things. I don't think her real estate business was doing much by the 1930s, but she was still selling. And in the census, again, she's listed, that's her career, that she's a real estate broker and sometimes a writer. One of the last things that she did was she submitted a poem to the Robbinsdale Post, and there was this great big billboard on West Broadway, and there was the names of all the men that were serving in World War II, and there were blue stars if they were, you know, serving and they were alive and everybody knew they were okay. And there were gold stars if they had been reported killed in action. And so she had written a poem about the gold stars. It's a little bit ironic, but Edith Robin Daniels served on the school board for 25 years. She was hit by a car in September of 1944 and died a month later at the age of 73. Her last poem, Gold Stars, was inspired by the Honor Roll Board on West Broadway. A story of sacrifice daily is told by the stars of deep blue that are turning to gold. The stars in old glory are shining more bright because of gold stars that reflect a new light. The stars of the bright gold that now shone through our tears shall shine in new glory all down through the years.
Throughout her life, Edith Robbins wrote poetry. In 1920, Ginn and Company of Boston, publishers of school books, with the assistance of Thaddeus Giddings, director of the Department of Public School Music in Minneapolis, discovered Edith Robbins through some of her published verses and secured her cooperation as a contributor and advisor on the publication of a series of school music readers. Four of these volumes were in use in the Minneapolis public schools during the 20s and 30s, and pursuant to this work, Edith Robbins and her daughter Helen Mary spent at least one summer in Boston writing and conferring on the publication. Several hundred songs with words by Edith Robbins appear in the series. Adelaide and Amy Robbins also published their poems, but Edith's may have been the most widely read. And now, here's Crystal Boyd with what may be the first audiobook of any of the Robbins daughters' works.
The Children's Land of Out of Doors by Edith Robbins. To Helen, Lewis, and Audria, and all the friendly children that I know, and all the other children I wish I knew. Edith Robbins, Robbinsdale, Minnesota. The Lovely Land of Out of Doors. The lovely land of out of doors, the land the children know, is filled with all the happy things that sing and bloom and grow. The arch above this lovely land is just the shining sky, with every kind of little cloud above the treetops high. For skies are peopled by the clouds when sunshine makes the day, and by the friendly twinkling stars to show the nighttime way. The streets are little narrow paths that lead through meadow land, or over fields and woods and hills that children understand. The grass or moss in summertime is soft and green and sweet, and in the autumn leaves of brown or red beneath our feet. Within this land there dwell with us the friendly bird that sings, and flowers and trees and rocks and hills and strangest living things. The kindly trees that make for us a quiet, cooling shade, and there are lovely sandy shores that little rivers made. And then the winter out of doors is made of ice and snow. And through this land on sleds and skates, how fast the children go. The lovely land of out of doors is very full of joy and happiness that can be found by any girl or boy. For all the little living things have messages to bring. The funny, happy creatures there that chirp and hum and sing. You have to play that they can talk and you can understand, if secrets you would really know of all this lovely land. The Elephant's Trunk. The elephant came with his trunk one day. The animal said, "Unpack and stay." And the elephant laughed, and the elephant said, "I can't. My trunk is part of my head." Sunny children. Rainy mornings when we wake, sunshine with our smiles we make. While the sun still hides his face, smiling children take his place. We can make the people say, "This is quite a pleasant day." My snowflake stars. When winter's turned the woods all brown, the snowflake stars steal softly down through chilly, frosty, wintry air until it's snow white everywhere. The snowflakes come from in the sky. I think that's just the reason why. If you look very close, you'll find there's stars of almost every kind. The Froggies' Singing School. I like to hear on summer nights the Froggies' Singing School. The frogs are hoarse, but still they sing beside the Froggies' pool. They do not say, "I cannot sing, I'm having such a cold." But every frog sings every song exactly as he's told. On summer nights when I'm alone, quite lonesome I would be, if I were where I could not hear my froggies sing to me. The Firefly Lanterns. I think it's such a funny sight to see the fireflies' lantern light across the meadows shining bright to lead the little bugs at night. My Pussy's Eyes. My pussy cat has eyes that light like lanterns when it's dark at night. The cat is wise to light her eyes. I wish I had, inside my head, a light to shine when I'm in bed. My Pansy's Tears. Some mornings, when I go to see my pansy faces smile at me, on every little face so dear, there seems to shine a small round tear. I cannot think the reason why my happy pansies have to cry. Then Mother comes and takes my hand and laughs and makes me understand. She says the tears are drops of dew from out the nighttime sky so blue. And so my pansies are not sad. The dewdrops only make them glad. Red Miss Tomato. Said Red Miss Tomato to Mr. Potato, "I'm afraid it's no fun in the ground with no sun." Said Mr. Potato to Red Miss Tomato, I was made to grow here, so I'm happy, my dear. Lady Slippers. The woodland fairies dance at night in velvet slippers, soft and light. And that's because the fairies know where lovely lady slippers grow. Tulips Awaking. The sleepy little tulip red stirred softly in her winter bed and said, I must awake, you see, for springtime surely waits for me. The baby tulips softly stirred when Mother Tulip's voice they heard and said, we'll wake, for people know it's springtime when the tulips grow. Pussy Willows. Three small kittens lost their mittens climbing willow trees. Three small kittens grew quite chilly, all began to sneeze. Three small kittens, for their mittens, sadly did meow. Tell us how to find our mittens. Willow, tell us how. Willow cried, oh, Pussy Will, oh, try. Naughty Willow, for their mittens, let the kittens cry. Naughty Willow kept their mittens hanging on the tree. That's the way the Pussy Willows came to grow, you see. The Little River. The Little River said to me, I have to hurry to the sea. And when I reach that distant shore, you would not know me any more. For other rivers come, you know, and on together we will go. And when I reach the far-off sea, a mighty river I will be. My Funny Shadow. Through sunny days, my shadow plays beside me everywhere. While through the dark and cloudy days, my shadow's never there. My Pledge to My America. America, my country, my pledge to you I give. I'll be a true American as long as I may live. America, my country, my land so dear to me. To you, my own America, I pledge my loyalty. The Fly's Skating Rink. Naughty fly, you seem to think Grandpa's head's a skating rink. Tickling so, as you go, making Grandpa wink and blink. Twinkling Stars. Twinkling stars, if I should go very far away, I know you would still be twinkling there, for you twinkle everywhere. Naughty Dandelion. Dandelion, brightest yellow, dandelion, naughty fellow. Laughs and says, I do not care, I'll keep growing everywhere. Our Flag. The flag for every little child, the flag for you and me, the dearest flag that ever floats on land or on the sea. Pussy Willow Kittens. Pussy Willow, like a kitten, with your fuzzy little mitten, Pussy Willow, purr and sing softest little songs of spring. Meadow Cattails. I'm sure that you would like to know how meadow cattails came to grow. They say brown velvet cats one day were in the meadow at their play. And while the velvet cats all purred, a dreadful barking dog they heard. And when the dog face they did see, the frightened cats ran up a tree. They hurried so that you will find they left their cat tails all behind. The Beetle's Ball. The big black beetle gave a ball, but it was in the night. So Mr. Firefly had to come and bring his lantern light. Mother Kitty's Lullaby. Mother Kitty's lullaby, when she hears her babies cry, is a gentle little purr while they nestle close to her. Softest purring lullaby, when the kitten babies cry, makes the kitten babies know Mother Kitty loves them so. My House of Sand. I built a lovely house of sand. It took a whole long day. The summer rain came pouring down and washed it all away. I was not sad, for what's the use? the way to have more fun is just to go to work again and build a better one. Potato's eye. The big potato has an eye, but yet I do not think that he can see a single thing. He cannot even wink. Too much lemonade. Little Billy drank, they say, too much lemonade one day. Then poor Billy grew so chilly. All his teeth went chatter, chatter. People said, "Oh, what's the matter?" Here's poor Billy, cold and chilly. The careless waves. As tides came in, the dancing waves wore white caps there at play. But on the shore, the careless waves threw white caps all away. My hollyhocks. My hollyhocks, like soldiers tall, are standing by the garden wall. I think that almost any day, those hollyhocks might march away. The penny. "Ha ha," said the penny before he was spent. And hippity hop to the bank he went. And merry the tinkle as penny hocked in, for that is the way the dollars begin. The Milky Way. I think my cat would like to play in what they call the Milky Way. For sometimes it does really seem that cats are made of milk and cream. If an airship she could fly and reach that path across the sky, she might drink all the milk, you see, and then no Milky Way there'd be. Sleepy Woodchuck. Funny woodchuck in the fall, round and fat as any ball, getting ready just to sleep in your winter nest so deep. When you're fat enough, I know, way down in your hole you'll go, not to eat a single thing till you waken in the spring. A splendid plan. If I were Mr. Circus Man, I'll tell you what would be my plan. Those animals that look so sad would roar because they'd be so glad. I'd buy the biggest ship at sea and take them home and set them free. To lonesome lions, I would say, "Get on, I'll take you home today." The hippopotamus would smile to meet his uncle near the Nile, for he has had a dreadful shiver. He missed so much his nice warm river. The elephant with his trunk would be soon sailing out across the sea. The camel and the tall giraffe at thought of Africa would laugh. I'd set the bears in northern snow, then south to jungle land I'd go. Each animal would understand I'd take him to his native land. In freedom's cause, I'd sail the sea to set the animals all free. And so our flag would have to float above my beautiful big boat. I'd run when I had set on shore each lion's cage with open door, before, with open mouth so wide, he'd say to me, "Please come inside." The naughty young moth. Said the ladybug brown to the naughty young moth, "Do you think it is right to eat holes in that cloth?" Said the naughty young moth, "It's a habit so strong that I keep eating cloth, though I know it is wrong. For I ought to have tried such a habit to drop, but I let it go on till I simply can't stop." Green Miss Dill. Said Green Miss Dill, "I fear I'll be soon in a pickle. Oh, dear me!" That queer camel. The camel is an animal quite queer, I think. They say he walks for days and days without a drink. I asked the circus camel how such things could be. That camel answered not a word, just winked at me. The popcorn ball. The popcorn man gave a popcorn ball. The popcorn cart was the dancing hall. The popcorn dancers hopped and hopped and danced until their heads all popped. Gentle darkness. Gentle darkness, come and stay when we're weary of our play. Gentle darkness, bring the night. Help us sleep till morning light. The end. Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one.
Back home, sitting hand in hand, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, in Robbinsdale, in Robbinsdale.
Our theme music is provided by Gabe Barnett and Them Rounders.